welcome to Native Sun on Sun Sounds of Arizona, focusing on indigenous news and culture. I'm your volunteer reader, Kim Chupa Cornell. Our first story is Healthy, Culturally Tailored Meals Reduce Hospital Visits for Heart Disease on Navajo Nation by Elise Wild for Native News Online. A first-of-its-kind study showed what Indian country already knows. Food is medicine. Results of a randomized clinical trial conducted in the Navajo Nation were published earlier this week, revealing that culturally tailored meals led to fewer hospitalizations and emergency room visits for Native people with heart failure. The 12-week trial included 206 adults at two Indian Health Service sites on the Navajo Nation and provided participants with healthy meals made with locally sourced traditional foods. All participants had heart failure and had been hospitalized or visited the emergency room in the past 12 months. Heart disease is known as a lifestyle disease, meaning it can be largely prevented through diet, exercise, and environment. Native people have some of the highest rates of lifestyle disease, which experts credit to the lasting effects of tactics used in government campaigns to eradicate Native communities, geographic isolation on reservations, culling traditional foodways, imposing reliance on commodity foods, and forced assimilation that drive food insecurity. Access to healthy foods is a persistent barrier on the Navajo Nation, the largest reservation by land in the United States. There are only 13 grocery stores within the 27,000 square mile reservation. Patients in the study received 14 meals a week, along with appliances they needed to store and heat them, including microwaves, freezers, propane-fueled refrigerators, stoves, and propane supplies. The study found that participants saw fewer overall hospital visits, along with weight loss and decreased blood pressure. Participants also reported an increase in food security, with the provided meals increasing access to food where it would otherwise be limited. In our next story, Motorola launches Indigenous Collections app to help preserve Ojibwe language and culture by Levi Rickert for Native News Online. Motorola and the Lenovo Foundation have unveiled the next phase of their Indigenous Languages initiative with the launch of the Indigenous Collections app, a new digital platform created in partnership with the Rainy Lake Ojibwe community to preserve the Ojibwe language and the cultural knowledge it carries. The free Android app, which will be available through the Google Play Store, is designed to support Indigenous language and cultural revitalization by bringing together traditional stories, geographic landmarks, family history, and key vocabulary in a single platform. The app aims to help users understand not only Ojibwe words, but also the cultural teachings and meanings embedded within them. Motorola said the project was developed with a community-centered approach that respects Indigenous cultural protocols. Only knowledge approved for public sharing is included, and family tree information can only be shared by users as an image, helping to protect sensitive cultural information. The launch marks another milestone in Motorola's Indigenous Languages initiative, which began in 2021 when the company became the first smartphone manufacturer to fully support Niigata, an endangered Indigenous language from the Amazon, within its smartphone user interface. Since then, Motorola has expanded support to include Cherokee, Maori, Kangri, Kuvi, Layden, Kaingang, and most recently, Zapotec, through localized interfaces, keyboards, and digital resources. This initiative aligns with UNESCO's International Decade of Indigenous Languages, 2022 through 2032. Motorola and the Lenovo Foundation say they have worked alongside Indigenous communities and language experts to digitize endangered languages, making smartphone technology more accessible while amplifying Indigenous voices. According to the company, nearly 2 million words across Indigenous and minority languages have been made openly available to encourage collaboration among researchers, educators, and technology developers. Preserving a living language. Ojibwe is spoken across the parts of the United States and Canada by an estimated 50,000 people, with strong communities in Ontario and Manitoba. While it remains central to Ojibwe identity, the language continues to face challenges stemming from globalization and generations of discrimination against Indigenous cultures, contributing to declining intergenerational language transmission. Motorola said the new app reflects an expanded focus beyond language digitization to include cultural preservation. By documenting stories, traditions, and community knowledge, the company hopes to help future generations connect with their heritage in meaningful ways. Rather than relying primarily on academic institutions, Motorola worked directly with members of the Rainy Lake Ojibwe community to ensure the project reflected community priorities. Over the course of a year, Motorola collaborated with Ojibwe language instructor Jason Jones and Dr. Anton Truer, a professor of Ojibwe at Bemidji State University, along with community elders. Together, they recorded, transcribed, and translated traditional stories and personal narratives that now form the foundation of the app. Motorola says this collaborative process represents an evolution in its Indigenous language work by moving beyond software localization towards community-authored content that captures both language and the cultural narratives embedded within it. The app's focus on preserving and sharing Ojibwe stories is particularly valuable, said Dr. Truer. Storytelling remains one of the most effective ways to transmit language, cultural knowledge, worldview, and community history. The current collection already represents a meaningful archive, and the planned addition of further stories will increase the long-term significance of the project. Technology supporting language revitalization. As younger generations increasingly communicate through digital technology, Motorola says ensuring Indigenous languages have a strong digital presence has become increasingly important. By making these languages accessible on mobile devices, the company hopes to increase their visibility and encourage both speakers and non-speakers to engage with Indigenous cultures. Empowering Indigenous communities through technology is central to the Lenovo Foundation's mission, said Juliana Ribellotto, Motorola Global Director of Globalization. By supporting initiatives like the Ojibwe app, we're helping ensure innovation is inclusive, meaningful, and reflective of diverse voices. At Motorola, this commitment continues to evolve as we listen, learn, and build technology that empowers everyone. With the introduction of the Indigenous Collections app, Motorola says it is taking another step toward ensuring Indigenous languages are not only preserved, but also remain visible, accessible, and actively used in the digital age. In our next story, for Yukon River residents, salmon shortages have health consequences. Physical and mental health suffer when salmon that is important to nutrition, culture, and identity is no longer available, tribal representatives say. By Yareth Rosen for the Alaskan Beacon, found in ICT News. When 26-year-old Terza Bryant was a kid, she knew how to watch the cottonwood trees along the Yukon River for the sign that it was time to fish for salmon. "We know that the fish are coming when the cotton's flying from the cottonwood," she said. But run collapses and successive fishing closures along the river have rendered the cottonwood signal meaningless. "I remember that first summer that we couldn't fish, watching the cotton flying and being like, what it felt like I was drifting. I'm like, what am I doing?" she said. That drifting feeling includes interactions with members of her extended family who had moved to cities but used to gather in Galena during fishing season. "They don't have a reason to come home now," she said. Bryant described that odd feeling during a presentation in March at an Anchorage Tribal Environmental Conference. A 2025 graduate of the University of Alaska Fairbanks Center for One Health Research Master's Degree Program, which focuses on the human-animal environmental health connections in Alaska and the Arctic, she described the One Health concept as fitting perfectly with her family's tradition. Everything is related, so a healthy environment equals healthy animals, which equals healthy humans, said Bryant, who also holds a biology degree from UAF, and is now the environmental and education coordinator for the Loudoun Tribe, the Galena-based tribal government. That makes the collapse of runs in the Yukon River, where indigenous residents' culture is tied to communal salmon harvesting, preparation, and eating, very detrimental to our people, she said. On the Yukon River, salmon runs that used to support a thriving and lucrative commercial harvest have collapsed. The runs of Chinook, also called king salmon, that have been in steady decline since the early 2000s, took a nosedive in recent years. By 2022, Chinook abundance was down 81% below its long-term average, according to fishery biologists. Harvest closures that began in 2020 were extended, and in 2024, an Alaska-Canadian agreement established a 7-year moratorium on Chinook salmon fishing in the river to preserve Canadian origin stocks. Runs of chum salmon, a species that is generally more abundant in the river, suffered a similar but more sudden crash. A series of chum harvest closures, even for subsistence purposes, started in 2020, and by 2022, abundance had fallen 92% below the long-term average. Several factors working in combination are blamed for the declines. Scientists cite multiple climate change effects in both the ocean and freshwater bodies used by salmon. Those changes have not only affected the raw numbers of fish, but also contributed to the shrinking size of salmon, resulting in smaller egg loads carried to spawning grounds by females. Other factors cited are interceptions at sea by trawlers targeting groundfish species like pollock, changes forced by increasing loads of Asian hatchery fish in the ocean, past fishery management practices, and the parasites, which thrive in warmer conditions and have a more detrimental effect on Yukon Chinook than on any other type of salmon. Salmon protection activists say there is not much that can be done in the short term in Alaska to address those factors, other than to adjust fishery management to cut down on at-sea interception, also known as bycatch. We are truly fish people. Tribal representatives have made the argument repeatedly to fishery managers. Among them was Brian Ridley, chairman of the Tanana Chiefs Conference, a consortium of Interior Alaska tribal governments. Ridley, in testimony to the North Pacific Fishery Management Council at its February meeting in Anchorage, spoke about salmon-related health issues in terms similar to those Bryant used. He discussed Athabascan salmon traditions that go back millennia, as far back as 10,500 years ago, according to archaeologists' discoveries of Yukon River fish camps. "So we are truly fish people," he said. The approximately 20,000 people who live in the Texas-sized area covered by the Tanana Chiefs Conference need more protections to repair the Yukon River's weak salmon runs, he said. I've got to do the best I can for them, and that's why we're fighting so hard to try to get our fish back, he told the council. A dietary staple, salmon had until recently been the main source of protein for indigenous people who live along the interior Alaska River systems. Traditionally, salmon has made up about a third of the wild food that rural Alaskans eat, according to the State Department of Fish and Game. Along with the Yukon River Basin, their percentage was much higher, at least in the past. Store-bought substitutes, in addition to being expensive and of limited availability in rural Alaska villages that lack any outside road access, do not provide the same quality proteins and vitamins, minerals, and other omega-3 fatty acids, tribal organizations say. The Tanana Chiefs Conference says effects of salmon shortages are seen in medical records, In October 2024, it was said that there had been a 24.6% increase in diabetes and a staggering 70% increase in pre-diabetes among tribal members since 2019. Concerns in Alaska about adverse health effects from reduced salmon consumption fit into a larger pattern of problems around the circumpolar north, as wild and nutrient-rich foods traditional in indigenous diets have been gradually replaced by less healthful store-bought foods. A traditional foods comeback. Despite challenges around the Arctic, there have been successes in resurrecting traditional diets, which experts say are important for both physical and mental health. At the Alaska Native Medical Center in Anchorage, for example, traditional Native foods are served regularly with supplies donated by community members. Traditional foods are healing, nurturing medicine for our people, says the hospital's website. Donated traditional foods are served at other tribal healthcare facilities, too. Count last summer's culture camp organized by Eva Burke and other tribal leaders in the Interior Alaska community of Nenana as part of the healing process. Burke is a scientist, local food activist, and indigenous representative on the North Pacific Fishery Management Council's advisory panel. Nenana is located on the Tanana River, a Yukon River tributary. Burke and other members of the Nenana Native Association gathered local kids to teach them how to harvest and prepare salmon in the traditional way. For their activities, they used a smattering of locally caught chum salmon, also known as dog salmon, because it was traditionally fed to sled dogs. That was available through a very limited harvest opened last summer specifically for cultural camp purposes. As she described it, catching, preparing, and eating the local salmon was something of a healing process. Special care was taken to serve some of it to appreciative elders, she added. We scored them and smoked them for a day and cooked them over a fire and served them at a potlatch, she said. Fish that we could have normally cut for dogfish, we were treating with the utmost care and respect and savoring every last bit. The Nenana Native Association has scheduled another culture camp this summer, and there is another special allowance for culture camp harvesting this year, Burke said. The article was produced as a project for USC's Annenberg's Center for Health Journalism and the Center for Climate Journalism and Communication 2025 Health and Climate Change Reporting Fellowship. You're listening to Native Sun on Sun Sounds of Arizona. I'm your volunteer reader, Kim Chupa Cornell. In our next story, as screens take over, advocates say play, culture, are key to Native youth mental health, by Elise Wild for Native News Online. Native communities facing disproportionately high youth suicide and depression rates, worsened by social media and a lack of safe play spaces, are turning to play and cultural connection, like the Indigifit Kids campaign to address a mental health crisis facing the nation's youth. The answer to a growing mental health crisis in a world in which screens are omnipresent and social media is fueling a sense of despair among the nation's young people may be simple. Get outside and play. That's according to a new report by Kaboom, a nonprofit that builds playgrounds around the nation. The report was created in collaboration with Indigifit Kids, a three-year campaign by the Shakopee Mdewakanton Sioux community aimed at improving the physical and mental health of Native youth in Minnesota. The report outlines data that shows mental health among the nation's young people is plummeting, and Native youth are most at risk, with anxiety rising by 31%. While the issue touches every community, Native communities bear the brunt. Suicide rates among Native youth ages 15 to 19 are double that of white youth. But among the bleak numbers, there is hope. Kids who spend 60 minutes a day in nature have a 50% lower risk of mental health issues. Disconnection. Dr. Mark Baez, Coahuiltecan Tribe, is the president of the Society for Indian Psychologists, whose clinic work focuses on adolescents and children. Baez told Native News Online that the issues driving the plummeting youth mental health are compounded in Native communities by the lasting effects of colonialism, poverty, generational trauma, geographic isolation, and loss of culture through federal campaigns to erase Native Americans. Many youth carry both online and historical trauma stressors simultaneously, Baez said. Those stressors, he said, result in a sense of isolation, antithetical to the core of many Native cultures and communities, connection. As clinicians, some of the signs that we see are loneliness, depression, anxiety, difficulty maintaining face-to-face relationships, Baez said. For Native youth, we see a lot of our kids on social media being digitally connected while simultaneously feeling disconnected from their family, community, culture, and peers. While putting down the phones and getting outside to play might be part of the solution, Native communities are seriously lacking in accessible, safe play spaces compared to other communities. An assessment of 237 playgrounds on or near tribal lands and urban areas with high Native populations found nearly 70% posed safety hazards, with varying degrees of repair and replacement needed. Ashley Cornforth, Secretary Treasurer for the Shakopee Mdewakanton Sioux, told Native News Online, building play spaces for youth can be part of a tribe's stewardship of their land and seven generations planning. We have a connection to our ancestral land, she said. We're always going to be here. Play spaces are so integral to getting out and playing, and that physical activity has such a connection to mental health. How do we show that we want to maintain it? We want to make it stay good for our next youth. Screen time. While the effects have been clear for many years, a 2021 Wall Street Journal investigation confirmed what many parents already suspected. Social media harms children's mental health, and the tech giants behind the most popular apps are well aware. In recent years, tribal nations have filed suit against the social media companies, including Meta, Snap, ByteDance, and Alphabet, for their role in the youth mental health and suicide crisis plaguing Native communities. The suits point to addictive algorithms, gambling-like features, and exploitation of reciprocity. On top of being designed to draw youth in over and over again, social media can provide ample opportunity for cruel bullying far from the eyes of adults. We think just walk away and close the screen, right? Baez said. It's easier said than done. The exposure to trauma and harmful content is very real. Bullying, racism, lateral violence, misinformation. It has real harm. While the prevalence of screens in modern life may make screen time feel like an insurmountable obstacle for parents, both Baez and Cornforth said that healing Native youth and bringing them back to their culture starts with adults. If we want them to put their phones away, we need to do the same, Baez said. It sounds cliche, but kids are sponges, so lead by example. We need to create opportunities for youth to engage. Culture is prevention, and I go a step further. Culture is medicine, because this culture is what has given us the ability to be resilient. Listen. During a talking circle with Native youth in Minnesota about screen time led by IndigiFit Kids, Cornforth said the kids wanted to hear more about the positives of social media use. It's easy to go down the road that social media is fake, but there is also such goodness out there, she said. A big reality for a lot of Minnesota tribal communities is their land base is massive, so they are far away from a lot. Technology has become such a connector. I can talk to my cousins now, or I can talk to my grandma. And before, I didn't have that. I didn't have that connection to culture or language. The talking circle represents what Cornforth says needs to be at the center of helping Native kids thrive, listening to them. We need to listen to our youth more, and they'll tell us what they need, she said. IndigiFit will be building 5 play spaces in Native communities across Minnesota. In the spirit of listening, Native youth will be leading the design. They get to be the ones to build it, Cornforth said. They get to be the ones to design it. They get to be the ones who see how they want to play with it and how they want to use it. And that movement, that momentum of the kids getting to be the ones to drive everything, that makes me so excited. In our final story, Navajo Nation to deploy flock license plate cameras across 27,000 square miles by Brian Petersheim, Jr. for Arizona's family. As debate over mass surveillance and license plate reader technology intensifies across Arizona, the Navajo Nation has announced a new partnership with Flock Safety to deploy cameras across its lands. The Navajo Department of Criminal Investigation and the Navajo Nation Police Department will use Flock's license plate reader cameras as a tool to help solve crimes and find missing people, challenges that have long plagued one of the most underserved and hardest to police regions in the country. A vast land with a severe public safety crisis, the Navajo Nation is the largest land area held by an indigenous nation in the United States, covering roughly 27,000 square miles across northwestern Arizona, New Mexico, and Utah. The department operates with approximately one officer per 1,000 residents. Many officers respond to calls from more than 100 miles away, with response times that can exceed an hour, according to the Navajo Police Department. Those logistical challenges compound a broad public safety crisis that disproportionately affects indigenous communities. Indigenous women are murdered at up to 10 times the national average, police say. In 2024, more than 10,000 Native American people were reported missing, just over half of them women. It'll benefit our department by helping us identify suspect vehicles in our open active investigations, whether that may be drug smuggling, child abductions, missing persons, homicides, and more, a Navajo criminal investigator said in a statement released Thursday. Flock will assist us by being our eyes in the community and help get dangerous subjects in custody as we navigate the shortage of manpower on the reservation. It is simply an added tool for us. Growing debate over LPR technology in Arizona. The partnership comes as debate over license plate reader technology and mass surveillance intensifies statewide. Flock Safety currently partners with more than 60 Arizona law enforcement agencies, but the company's technology has drawn scrutiny from some privacy advocates and local officials. The cities of Flagstaff and Sedona ended their contracts with Flock Safety in 2025. The city of Chandler is also reconsidering extending its contract following lengthy public comment. In January, Republican State Senator Kevin Payne sponsored legislation that would have created statewide standards for automatic license plate reader systems used by law enforcement. The bill was killed in the Senate on March 4th. Flock Safety said in a statement that it supports legislation that creates guardrails for how license plate recognition data is used and shared, while preserving the effectiveness of this important public safety tool. The Navajo Nation also warns that tampering with or damaging the cameras is a criminal offense under Title 17 of the Navajo Nation Code. You've been listening to Native Son on Sun Sounds of Arizona. I'm your volunteer reader, Kim Chupa Cornell. Music is Land Back by Hallucination. Remember, if you miss a program, you can always get it on demand at sunsounds.org. Please join us next time for an upcoming episode.